Okay, so it is officially 6 o'clock. Good evening. Welcome to Global Math Department. My name is Paula Torres. I will be your host this evening. And there is a chat window for you to introduce yourselves as well. So please go ahead and start introducing. Again, tell us what you teach, where you teach, and your Twitter handle if you have one. And while you are doing that, just want to let you know, Global Math Department's here every Tuesday, presenting on something amazing and awesome, just like tonight will be. The chat window is there for general conversation, as well as you to ask questions. However, it will be much easier for a presenter if you notice at the top of the chat window, there are some other tabs that say chat, Q&A, polls, and handouts. If you put your questions in the Q&A, it's a little faster for our presenter this evening to get to those. So I would ask that you try to remember to put them in the Q&A. I will be here sort of lurking away, making sure that all of your questions get answered just in case you accidentally put them in the chat window. But again, it'll be easier if you put them in the Q&A. This is recorded. So I actually have already started the recording. After about a couple hours, it'll actually be posted. So if you wanted to come back, miss something, you wanted to watch it again, or you want to get a colleague down the hallway to watch it, you can come back using the same URL that got you in this evening. And this evening, we are listening to John McGowan. He's going to tell us all about the tips and tricks and ins and outs of how to use Equatio. And he's so humble and modest, he didn't really want me to tell you a whole lot. So I'm going to let him introduce himself and let him divulge the information that he would like. So without any further ado, John, go ahead and take it away.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Paula. Thank you to all of you other people out there that are joining us tonight. I really appreciate it that I always say that teacher time is our most valuable commodity, and so I'm always humbled when people want to share with me. So thanks. Just a little bit about myself. I am a math teacher. I currently don't have any students of my own right now because I left the classroom about 2 years ago to work on Equatio. And I've taught pretty much all levels of math from like grade 6 math up through some classes beyond AP Calculus in lots of places around the world, in different states. I've taught in Colorado, California, Hawaii, Taiwan, Singapore, and Chile. And I've pretty much taught in, I've taught independent schools, public schools. So I'm come with a vast array of experience, and really all I say is that means I generally haven't had the same prep more than once, which is not an enviable situation, I think, in terms of creating resources. But along the way, I have lots of times where I get to create new content and start over, which is always a lot of fun because I got to be very I get to say innovative, but it's not necessarily innovative. I had the opportunity to take a lot of risk, and so that's been great, and I love to adapt the fail forward mentality. So that's really me. I'm a math teacher that likes to take chances to help engage students, because that's really the heart of what we're trying to do here. So hopefully you came to learn more about like how to improve your work, digital math workflow. And so digital math, I think that's really what I want to kind of get at first in this whole communication bit, because I have so many teachers and so many students and so many former parents that I mean former students and parents that talk to me about the communication. And I always hear about what methods of communication are valid. And I think about that because I travel a lot and I'm on the plane and the person sitting next to me always wants to talk about what do I do. And I say, oh, I'm a math teacher. And then generally they use that as like a therapy session to tell me how much they hated math or how much they love math. And a lot of times they'll say like, oh, I used to hate math because, you know, I would get the right answer, but I wouldn't do it the same way the teacher did. And then they would say that I was wrong. So I think that that's a really big gripe or a really big pain point about students' math education is the methods of communication that they feel like their communication methods are not valid. And so I think that's a huge component that we want to make sure that we can make everyone's voices heard and really just say that the way that they want to communicate is valid. So that's really the method that I want to do is empower students to respond and create and consume math in the way that they choose, not the way that I as a teacher dictate. And so the old adage of paper and pencil are best for math is a lot of times what I hear when I say like, oh, well, why do you need to use a computer? Paper and pencil is best. And I would agree that paper and pencil is best for some people. I had a math teacher that was in, when I was in seventh grade, I used to love math. When I was in seventh grade, I did not like math because my teacher required me to always use a pencil. And I don't like writing in pencil. I prefer to write in pen. She would not allow me to turn in my paper if it was written in pen because she said, what happens if I make a mistake? I couldn't erase it. And I say, well, I won't make a mistake. And we all know that that's not true. But I really would rather redo the entire paper writing in pen because I liked the flow. I just didn't like writing with pencils. And so I say that pencil is not best for me. I prefer pen. And at the same time, like I think some of the time, there are times when I'd rather have a verbal communication. So written communication is not always best. And so I think that there are some other people who have like requirements where they can't respond in certain ways. And we don't want to invalidate their method of communication by saying like, oh, since you did not write it down on a piece of paper with pencil and turn it into me, I'm not going to accept that as you being able to show your understanding for math. So I think that's really the core of everything that I'm going at here is that the digital math flow can empower some students to work. And I think that's a big thing about it. So I'm talking a lot about Equatio and Desmos and the Google G Suite as ways where we can leverage students' engagement by giving them the opportunity to choose the way that they want to respond to the math. And so I think I'm going to talk a lot about Equatio because that is literally the heart of what I do, but I want to make sure that I do honor what I'm talking about with the title. So if you came here to learn about your digital workflow, that's awesome. I'm going to talk about that a lot in Desmos and Equatio and Google. So I'm going to highlight all of those. And please hit up the chat or the Q&A if you want to have a lot of different ideas. I love seeing all the people from the East Coast. I grew up in West Virginia and then continued to move west after that. So it's great to see all those Ohioans. And I've spent a lot of time in Ontario lately as well. So thanks for showing up. So what is Equatio? So Equatio, I think about it, an easy-to-use STEM editor. So you don't need to learn any math code, no programming languages required. There's no prerequisite to showing your understanding for a digital method. It should be intuitive, fun, and delightful. And that's what I believe doing math is fun. And I think it should be fun from a digital standpoint. It should be fun for our students. That delightful aspect. I think when I have a lot of verbal like chuckles or guffaws when I'm doing publicly sessions in these because people are like, that's not what I think about doing math online. It is not fun. It's not intuitive. It's not delightful. Usually I'm like hunting for some buttons. So I'm really trying to not have that be the same experience. And we built Equatio on the Universal Design for Learning principle. I'm not going to belabor that point, but really I think that that is an amazing method of teaching. Universal Design for Learning essentially says that students should be able to choose the way in which that they interact. Really, it's a framework that says that we should have, if something is required for some, it's awesome for all. So just like anybody can use a ramp to enter the building, some people can't use the stairs. Like the FedEx person can't carry their boxes on a trolley up the stairs. They need to use the ramp. There are people in a wheelchair need to use a ramp. And so if the ramp exists, everybody can use it. So it's the same thing if we make math and STEM tools that all people can use, everybody's going to benefit from. And then the other part of that is that accessibility piece. I think accessibility is it's required for some of those students if they have an IEP or a 504, but honestly, I think it really can cement some of the math from a pedagogical standpoint in ways that I didn't realize until I started exploring it a few years ago, my last few years in the classroom. So I am actually going to kind of jump off of that the brief overview and then talk about show a demo of Equatio while we're working in the G Suite. So if you haven't ever heard of Equatio, I think one of the things that, how did I shift into this? I loved using Google Classroom, the Google G Suite and at the time of the Google Docs, and my students, it gave them a new way to interact. I shared a classroom document where they could all edit. And I was astounded to see one of the students who never wanted to respond verbally. She was a voracious commenter and a typer, and that medium was the method that she wanted to interact with the math. And so that was a huge component that was eye-opening to me, that she didn't want to talk out loud. She had great ideas, great methods of solutions to share. She'd write it up on a whiteboard, and when it came time to present, you're like, are you speaking? Like, are the words coming out of your mouth? I see your lips moving, but I don't hear anything. But she had such a powerful voice in the written medium. And so I found out that I wanted to find out how can I tap into that knowledge and how can I interact in a way that she wants to interact with and really to amplify my classroom. And so that's where I learned how to code. I made a Google add-on called GMath, and that really set off a lot of my passion by really trying to figure out more ways that students could respond digitally. So I love that that opens up a new realm of communication methods for students. And then on top of that, I would see other benefits by sharing a document with a problem set for students. I could jump in and see what they're doing individually. And I had a girl who would sit in the front of the classroom and I could help her without verbally communicating because she didn't want other people to know that she was getting help. So she would never ask questions, but I could help her she could ask me a question through the general commenting features. And so it was a really great way to communicate in other methods so that it really empowered the students to ask questions and get engaged. And so that's the other point, is that engagement piece. I always say for teachers, like, we're all artists. We have our own methods that we teach in. And so I think the major component is, if I'm going to teach a student, that's what I do. I usually say I'm a math teacher, but I teach kids. So I need to get those students engaged, and then I can utilize my questioning skills or the different nuances that make me have my, you know, typical flair of a teacher, that once they're engaged, then I can go ahead and utilize those skills. So many times I have different students in my head of times when they were trying to get me off topic, in a sense, what they would say. But really it wasn't that I was off topic. They were engaged. They might be asking me a question about, like, well, why did you use purple instead of red for those circles? And so that was good. That's, for me, they're engaged. They're asking me something. That's why I love the, what do you wonder? What do you notice about these things? Because it gets them engaged. They might be asking a question and we're having a communication. We're having a dialogue. And then I can use my questioning skills to steer those towards a more mathematical approach. Or even if that wonder and notice part is very mathematical, I think, in that discovery process and that curiosity, it's, we're building all those things. And so I love bringing that student engagement and getting them to think about things in different ways. And the technology can really amplify that by giving them alternative ways to respond. And so Equatio's got a few different flavors. It's got the Equatio for Google is our main one. It's a Chrome extension, and it works in the entire G Suite and then other places on the web as well. And you can see we have all those input methods. I'll demo a lot of them when I go to the demo in a minute. We also have Equatio that's an install block for Mac or PCs. And so essentially it does the same thing, but instead of inserting into G Suite, it'll insert into Microsoft Word. Or it'll give you the ability to, like, save the images or copy some stuff so you can put them into other areas. If you're editing or creating content in other realms, you can do that as well. And then we have this thing called the Equatio Math Space that I'll show as well. Essentially, that is a digital whiteboard with virtual manipulatives that's kind of built to do math. So I'm going to take a departure from my slides there. You can look at those if you like. It's kind of like with my students, I can give you some stuff and we're going to jump in and do some demoing. So I'm going to share my screen and we're going to go ahead and see Equatio in action a little bit. So one of the things that I want to see, there we go. So in the Google Doc part, I talked a little bit about highlighting. So you can see up here that Equatio is a Chrome extension. I click on the button and it'll show me what I can do. So a lot of times the little toolbar will come up and that's when I can do my input methods. There are other places where if I'm other places outside the G Suite, if I'm on the web somewhere and I pop that up, it'll give me my screenshot option because that's all I can do. So the different input methods I have are an equation editor, a LaTeX editor. I'm going to jump over that. I'm not going to show that. If you know LaTeX, awesome. You can go ahead and do that. You can use that. That's great. We have a graph editor, and that's the full Desmos graphing calculator. So that is awesome. It has lots of things that we can do, and we can bring all that Desmos stuff right into the G Suite and let the students interact with that. We have a handwriting recognition tab where I'm on a touchscreen Chromebook as my daily driver that I'm demoing here. And so that's nice because I can show that the touch capability. Because as I would say that the handwriting aspect of math is very important. I just think that the form of paper and pencil, we can do that as well. We can amplify that. Then we have a speech input and Equatio Mobile, I'll show a little bit later. And then we have a screenshot reader. And so on top of that, in the options menu, there's a couple of different things that we can do as well. Like I said, I've taught abroad. So one of the things that I found was that with my English language learners, they usually love math because there's not a lot of words that they could do and they could really kind of work without having to explain themselves verbally. And then, so, but one of the things I found is then in their native language or in their native tongue, it was really great to have them communicate. And so we have a few different localizations. So if I change it to Spanish, the whole thing gets localized in Spanish, and I can use my predictions in Spanish. I can speak in Spanish. And when I insert it into the document, it'll have the Spanish spoken math. So it'll read it back to me in Spanish. I also have a French localization where I can speak in French, predict in French. Well, I can't speak in French, but a person could speak in French and use the French prediction. And then currently, though, if you insert it in French, it will only read it back to you in English. Hopefully we'll have that localized in French by around the new year. And so those are those options. And so all these are the prediction options as well. You can toggle them on or off. For instance, if you don't teach chemistry, you might want to toggle those off and not have them, because there's something like 1,200 different chemical compounds and formulas that are dealing with chemistry that you might not want to use. And so you can toggle those off so they don't populate your prediction list. And then the formulas. One of the things about the math font size, so this is probably the number one question that I get about Equatio, is how do I make it get in line in Google Docs? And so the math font size is one of the ways that I can change the rendering of my math when I insert it. And I also, it also changes how big it is in my toolbar. So my default size is extra large. We've got a lot of, I don't want to say pushback, but a lot of feedback whenever we change these defaults. So that's why I leave them as regular, which is normal. But it's dependent on, I don't want to get technical, but it's dependent on a size of the X or a size of a, some of the math that you create. So that is dependent upon that, not how big your equation is. It's dependent on the size of the X. And so I can jump in there, and that's when I can do some stuff. So how is Equatio different? Like I talked about it being that STEM editor. So I think a lot of you of math teachers are familiar with clicking, finding the math you want to do and clicking that button. So we have a lot of these palette based buttons down here in the bottom right. I tried to hide them because I'm trying to shift your behavior to not hunting and pecking for those buttons and not trying to find them. But if you love to do that, that's great. You know, Universal Design for Learning, UDL, says you can choose to do that. So we have them down here. And if you see one that's missing that you like to use, let me know and we can try to add it in there. I'm trying to help you not press those buttons though, to be a more intuitive aspect. One of the things that I found is like for my students, there's like if they want to make a fraction, they can just click that button and then they have to replace the A and the B. That's not very, I found, why is that not great? It's not great because there's a lot of transference of knowledge that students have to do if they wanted to make a fraction. I had one student, we were talking about square roots, and that was one of the things that they were really struggling with is even after it was like, we were doing probably half an hour of them putting in some square roots. And then finally they're like, I can never find the square root button that I want. And I would talk to them and I'd go stand next to the student and it is under the math button, and they found the square root of X. And they're like, yeah, I never want the square root of X button though. I want the square root of 16 or the square root of 4 button. And so that was like an added cognitive load that they have to pre-plan what they want to do. And then they have to have like that extra level of information where they need to transfer what they're doing. So it's not as straightforward. And so that was why technology was like this added level of frustration for that student. So instead of button clicking, we just wanted to make it intuitive. So if I wanted to make the square root of 4, they could just start typing the phrase and we would predict what those notational components could be. So if you want to make a square root, you just hit enter and then it creates a square root symbol. So that I think is a really great way for them to tie the terminology next to the notation as well. So they might know what the phrase is and they can acquire the notational component along the way. So they don't have to have both forms of the knowledge in advance of being able to represent their thoughts digitally. So if they're just learning about square roots, then they can easily make those and they can get it and they can insert that into their document. So I think that's one key component, is that prediction component from a pedagogical standpoint. I think it will help them to make it more concrete, the connection between the terminology and the notation. So I think that's a great way that students can acquire that. And so on top of that, it won't come through because I have headphones on, but if you look in and it reads that out, we automatically put the description there of what that math is. It'll literally read out the square root of 4. So TextTap has another product called Read and Write, which is essentially it's an accessibility tool. There's lots of other screen readers out there as well. If it comes by and encounters that, it will read it out the alt text. So it'll read it out as a square root of 4. So again, a great way that if a student has like a notational component, maybe they could, they don't know what the terminology is, they could use a different method. So maybe they could just use the handwriting and they say, my teacher wrote this thing down. I have no idea what that is. So they could just directly copy it from the handwriting. And if they insert that in there, then we can have that accessibility read it back out to them. So they can help acquire what that notation is and hear that say, oh, that's the square root of 4. So I think that's a great way for that. They don't have to have the note. They can do the notation, but they might not know the terminology. So the notation helps them acquire the terminology and helps them be more fluent in there. So I think that's a great way. I'm going to jump back to look at the Q&A to see if there's any questions or chats in there. So good, so people can hear us. I'll talk about the pricing at the end. Essentially, it's free for teachers, and then it comes down to a different price depending on how much you would adopt for the premium. So the quick answer on that is it is $1 a student if you go the domain wide, or if you have read and write it, there's even a discount on that. So so that input method. So we have the prediction component, which I think, as I've talked about, it's a great way for that learning part. But there's other ways. For instance, we have the speech input. Again, there's many ways we talk about math, and maybe it helps students to acquire that knowledge. So I was one of the impetus behind putting this method is I was at a Starbucks and I was seeing a girl being tutored by another girl. And the tutor said, write 3 squared. And the girl wrote 32. And the tutor was like, no, 3 squared. And the girl erased the 2 and then just wrote it smaller. So she wrote, the girl just wrote a 3, erased it, and then put a 2 like smaller. She didn't know what to do. She knew the 2, something funky was going on with that 2. She didn't know what the placement was, but she knew it was odd. The tutor kept saying, no, 3 squared. And after like 4 or 5 iterations, she just finally gave up. And then she wrote it for the girl. I was thinking, oh, that's not really going to help that student acquire what that squared is. You could tell as a teacher that she had something was going on with that 2. What was it? So with the speech input, you could just say 3 squared. And then you could see like, oh, it goes up there in that superscript. So it can help the students acquire that knowledge. And the speech input, I think, is great because it's faster for me. So there's some workflow benefits. So I can give that extra speed in there. So essentially what the speech input is, you'll see over here on the left that we start saying, this is what we think you're saying in words. And then it will transcribe it into some math stuff. Notice when I say and again, it'll put those plus signs. And that essentially transcribes it into the kind of quote unquote math language, but it works well if I'm x squared plus 4x plus 4 equals 0. And so it'll go ahead and transcribe that into the kind of mathematical notation. And that does work in other languages as well. I'm not going to demonstrate my poor Spanish spoken Spanish math words, or even more poor French, but you can go ahead and test that out on your own. So the speech input's a great way for us to jump in and create that. So I want to kind of talk a little bit more about this input method. So I've kind of showed the handwriting and the speech input, but let's go ahead and jump to, I don't want to bury the lead about the Desmos component. So notice I did that speech spoken component. If I click on my graph editor, it already has that stuff that I just spoke. So literally I can speak something and then have my Desmos graph and then insert that. So I can bring that Desmos graph from speaking it and then speak it into existence and then plop it in there. So I can bring it into my Google Doc, I can bring it into a Google Form or a Google Slide, anywhere that I want to interact with that, I can go ahead and do that. And so all it is that it's the same Desmos calculator that you can use on desmos.com/calculator, but I can do a variety of input methods. So again, some of those students, like maybe I wanted to do X cubed, but I don't really know how to make the cube symbol. I can just start typing in there with the prediction and we'll bring it up. So if I want to do X cubed, we'll go ahead and graph that for me. The other part about that is like some of those things that are, if they're cumbersome notationally, we should be able to make them more intuitively. And so with that prediction, we have some Desmos specific predictions. They're real math prediction as well. They just work better in the Desmos context. So like sometimes I want to do like a domain restriction. So if I start typing domain restriction and hit enter, we go ahead and then restrict that domain. We pre-populate it. So if I want to go from like -4 I can even do it with fractions as well. So if I want to do like to 1/3, it'll go ahead and do that. So -4 to 1/3, and it'll restrict that domain. And so we also have another one that works out as a range restriction as well. So I could do like X equals Y cubed with a range restriction, and it'll go ahead and do that. So I get, really, it's that cumbersome notational bit, so that should be intuitive for me to be able to create that. That's why I love Desmos. Desmos literally shifted how I taught back in like 2013 is when I was trying to put it into GMath, and really it shifted so much of what I taught. So I think that's another great component is if you're, I assume you're familiar with Desmos. If not, go play and you'll be like awed about such amazingness. But I think one of the great things I love about it is I can say like, it's somewhat intuitive. I want to add a slide or I can. And then that part really shifts my math instruction because it gives all of that students, like I do this with a room full of teachers who sometimes are not math teachers. They might be administrators or other people. And they are self-proclaimed people who hate math or are not math people, not good at math. And I can give them this and they'll say like, well, I'll say, what do you wonder? What do you notice about that? Those are great questions again, because they, there's no correct answer on those. Whatever you wonder is what you wonder. You have your own opinion. That's great. It's a great way to engage them. But so many times I can see that still say like, even if it was just like AX squared, I can play, go ahead and play that. And they'll say like, oh, something's going on there. And just that playing part, that intuitive, that curiosity, they say, whoa, what happened there? And within 2 or 3 minutes, the students or the participants in the room can go ahead and make conjectures about what's happening. Like something funky is going on there when my A goes from positive to negative. They're discovering that. I don't have to tell them about the characteristics of a quadratic when A is positive and when A is negative. And then they also, so that's a great way to for them to discover concavity. And on top of that, then I can also talk a little bit about, you know, what happens there? Why is that one? What do you notice between this one and another one? So I can, the good part about these is if I drop that graph here into my Google Doc, then it gets me to, my students can then go ahead and edit that out. And if they edit that, then they can go ahead and play with that. So I can ask them questions. So that's like one way that, so like, how is that different from just good being Desmos.com? Like, well, one, it's within the G Suite, so I can bring them in there. And that's a really weird that it brought up that aspect ratio. So I can ask them questions, but I can go ahead and do that and bring it into a different realm. So it's bringing the Desmos into other places as well and leveraging on top of that, some of that capability. Also, if you haven't been aware, so we'll talk a little bit about accessibility. So Desmos is really great for accessibility. And one of my fun favorite parts that you won't be able to hear because of my headphones, but if you do Alt-T, so if I hit Alt-T on my Chromebook, it turns on an audio trace. And then if I type like H, it will let me hear that. It'll let me hear that graph. So it'll have it go from left to right. And so I can go ahead and just hear what that graph sounds like. Again, like I can see the graph. That's not a problem for me. But hearing that pitch really just gives that added understanding about it. And so that's really, I love when I add in like a sine graph and then I do an audio trace on that. Then if I hear that from left to right, then it gives me that added benefit. And students will say like, oh, there's like a pattern there. Or like they'll start talking about cycles or they'll start doing some sort of thing that motivates like what a periodic function looks like. And so those are all great things that add to that mathematical curiosity. And so I think the extra ways, they're extra enhancements to that accessibility just adds to that learning. So it is required for some, like if I was blind, which is the impetus behind this, Desmos has a blind coder that can show what that experience is like. It's required for them to hear that part, but it's required for some and just awesome for everybody.
Marianne's flying away.
Sorry, was there a question? Oh, it just popped up there. Yeah, so the axis of symmetry and the parabola. So let's see, where was I? It was just some of the prediction components. So if I want to talk about like the axis of symmetry, it'll just give you that x equals negative b over 2a. So those are just all of our prediction things layered into the Desmos window there. So that's a great bit to have that prediction just give a lot of different bits. I also love the same point. There's many different things for Desmos that you could do on that. So like even if you wanted to have like to the power, use that prediction part, and you can have to the power of variables, you know, so it just kind of helps add the prediction part, makes that more intuitive as well. Also on Desmos.com, so one of the things is I have like all these different graphs that I might want to bring in. So once I take something, I can use the Desmos built-in ones. So let's say I want to take this graph, and I can bring this into other areas. If I click on the share graph and I copy this, now I can go to anywhere that I have Equatio open and I can just copy and paste that. So I paste it. So if I hit Control V and I paste it, it'll import that graph. Oh, it didn't like that bit. I think it's sometimes if I have other ones. So if I let's go ahead and if I import that into one that already had some stuff, sometimes it doesn't like it as it rewrites over. There we go. It is going to, for some reason, not like that. That's great when I'm demoing and it doesn't want to cooperate with me. So you can, you should be able to just copy that and bring those in, and it should work. Sometimes we're having a bug with things when there's a text. So we might have reintroduced a bug. So if there was like non-equation types, we'll see. We'll try one more time. Nope, it doesn't like that. I'll have to look and see what's going on there. That's not fun when I'm demoing. But you can bring those back in, and it's a nice way to create, to take the stuff that you've already created and bring it into other places. So on top of that, so everywhere that I have these input methods, I can go ahead and utilize those. So it's the same experience. So one of those ways is a Google Form. So I'm going to jump over and look at Google Forms, because Forms is really where I leverage a lot of my space. So one of the things here is you'll see I have a variety of things going on in this graph, in this Google Form. Really what it is I have some questions and I had some responses. Kind of want to show you what some of the power can be. But go back to editing my question. So if you haven't used Google Forms before, you should. It's amazing. It's a huge time saver. I love it from a formative assessment standpoint, and I literally can use it to inform my instruction in real time. I do warm-up problems. My students have 3 warm-up problems. They know there's 5 minutes to be in a class. They have it. I can set those up. They know where to go. I can disseminate with Google Classroom or have a short URL or however I want to give it to them, whatever LMS I'm using. They can automatically jump in and start working, and I don't have to kind of be administering it. I don't have to worry about passing it out. They know that they come in, they start working on it, and I can walk around and connect with the kids and talk to them a little bit for those 5 minutes and check in with someone who might have been struggling in the previous class period, or check in with someone who I, you know, maybe want to talk to them about something else. And so it's great. They can be working while I am kind of amplifying myself. I'm kind of making myself more efficient. And when they respond, so how do I put that math in? You just click on the Equatio button and it pops up the icon, and I can put my math into the question. So this very generic, solve for X, here's an equation. One of the things when the student sees it, when they pop over, it's the same bit. And so this one I've actually turned on as a quiz. So if you haven't used Google Forms, if you go to the settings, you can turn it into a quiz. You can click on make this assignment a quiz. And then you can change the different options. One of the things, so why do I like this part? Is if you turn it to a quiz, there are an answer key that you can put in. And you can see I put in a bunch of different math bits. And so you can also put in, if you want, like add an extra one for like X equals 8. So it doesn't have to be Equatio generated. You could put whatever you want. I could also maybe put 8 if I would accept that. So I can put a variety of more than one correct answer that it'll mark automatically as correct. But if I did generate something with Equatio, I could just say like, if I click on this, I'll say, well, I would take X equals 8 as a response, and I can insert that. So I could say, I would take that if they submitted X equals 8. And so how does that help me out as a teacher to leverage my time? Well, here the students, if they have Equatio, they can pop that open and they can just respond as normal. One of the things that I love here is that handwriting bit. I can literally just say, well, I have 3X equals 24, and so X equals that was supposed to be an 8. It kind of went and didn't like my 3 there. Make it a little better. So if I put that 3 in, now I can insert that. And it'll be literally like the same thing as if I wrote it down on a piece of paper, but I, as a teacher, want it to be digital, because now one of the things I can look at is I can see, well, look, let me view my score. It said it didn't like that. Well, I'll show you why I didn't like that. It's because I don't have that as one of my responses yet. So I need to put that down as one of the answers. So I can see that. I can tell them with my quiz options not to show them all those. But when I, as a teacher, I can see those all come in and I can see what are the different responses here. And I can actually toggle those on and say that they're correct. So some of them might be they're ungraded, You can see here that I took a piece of paper and took a picture. I'll show that method. Or you can even submit a response here with Desmos. So all those things came in. So I can see those responses in real time at the beginning and then say, is this what I intended? Did I think that they would get these answers? If not, maybe I need to go back and I can't move on because I thought they all had this concept ready, but they don't. So I need to kind of do some other remediation or reteaching a specific concept before I move on. I can get that at the beginning of class when I'm planning my instruction and not like after the period or halfway through class. So I can really use that to inform my instruction. On top of that, I can see the individual responses and see where they were. So if I was collecting their name, I can go ahead and loop back for those students that might have missed a specific concept and talk to them about a response. So it really leverages my power to do that. I'm going to jump over here to the response spreadsheet. So if you click this, it shows you the responses. So this is why, again, I think Google Forms is really great because I showed all of my responses and it shows their automatic score. And so here I can use that score or I can edit that. So one of the things I think is where do I spend the most of my time in grading is when I have students who get the wrong answer. The right answer looks to me, I can grade very quickly if it's all correct because it all looks the same. I have an anticipation of what it looks like. It's when it's wrong is where I have to spend a lot of time trying to debrief what the student is doing. And so that's where from a spreadsheet, I can work really fast and leverage myself and leverage technology. So one of the things you might notice here is that is when I responded, this is the Quatio URL. And that's how it can automatically grade that. You can also use Fluberu. One of the things it does is it grades for automatic lists. And so since I did that from a handwriting bit, it that response that it looked like it should have been correct. So I can take that and I can add that and say, well, I want this to be correct. So I can literally just copy that and I can hop over back to my form. So if I'm given this question again for another class period later on, I can say, hey, I'll add that as a correct answer. And then now if I go back to edit the question, and I can see that that's now a possible solution. So if that same student responded again, it would mark it correct. So that's one thing that you could set up that it's okay if it doesn't mark it through on the first run. You don't have to mark it wrong. So it can easily grade the correct answers, and then you can work on the ones that are incorrect after that to try to make it more effective for you. And so I think that's a really great way that I can leverage that technology. Like if a computer can grade it, it should on top, it should help me out with that. That's what I want to impact the students who get it incorrect. So those, though I want to look at them, I don't want to look at the URL. It's not helpful for me in terms of seeing whether they got it right or not. I'm not a computer. I can't tell. There's just the technical part. This is a LaTeX URL, encoded LaTeX in the answer. So the math is in the bit. But if I click on the Equatio icon again, what it'll do is it'll take, it knows when Equatio has made a response and it'll automatically turn those into the images or the math bit. So you can see that this person submitted a graph. And so I can see that graph just here in the spreadsheet. So it's a great way to see that. And so I think it's a great way for me to see all in one viewpoint, all of the responses that I had. So let's talk a little bit now about this other part. I've been kind of skimming over Equatio Mobile. Notice here that this is just a picture that I took from my mobile phone. And so I want to show how that response could be. That same student that was my impetus for using the Google Docs, the one who didn't want to speak out loud, her written work was amazing. Like her notebook was always impeccable. She loved her spacing. Like I would look at her notebook and be astounded because it was the opposite of the organization that I had. It was like she pre-planned out what it would look like. And it was hardly any mistakes. Now, maybe that probably talks some insight into her as a student, but she wanted to interact in that written way. So I didn't want to say like, oh, you must use digital, you must learn how to type, because she wanted to interact with her paper and her pencil. So that was what she loved to do. And so I'm like, that's great, but I want it to be digital because I want to use my digital workflow because that makes me faster as a teacher. So somehow we need to get this to be digital. So that same student could then use Equatio Mobile. So if you click on this Equatio Mobile, all it is a URL, and it works on pretty much any device. If you go there, then it gives you that ability to do that. So if I click on this m.equate.io, it'll show me where I have Equatio open, where I can use it. So it knows right away that I have it in this untitled document, which is this one. And so also if you change that, it will change in Equatio Mobile. So now you can see that it knows that that's called Equatio Demo. It says the last time it was open. And here, this Equatio, that's my Google form. So that's where, if I want to respond to the form, I can use this one. So if I click on that, it'll say like, okay, now it's kind of like the extension of my cursor. So here, this is where the problem is open. And this is where I can respond. So with Equatio, so it's much easier to show you in the URL in this window, but it works better for the picture if it's like a phone with a back-facing camera. So here, what I can do is I can have three options. I can use handwriting, I can use speech, or I can take a picture. So I have a touchscreen Chromebook. You might not have a touchscreen. Maybe you have a Mac.